And now, a warrior for the Word of God and the Constitution of the United States, a Marine Corps veteran, a Harvard-trained attorney, Bishop of the Call Churches, and founder and president of STAND. Staying true to America's national destiny, the voice of the awakening, your host, Bishop E.W. Jackson.
Welcome to the post-election edition of The Awakening. Oh, folks, this is a day that will go down in history. One of the greatest days for the American people in our long, illustrious history. I cannot begin to tell you how elated I am. Donald Trump is now President-elect Donald Trump and will soon be sworn in and inaugurated as the 47th President of the United States of America. Oh, folks, I have not been able to wipe the smile off of my face since about 3 a.m. or maybe a little earlier than that, about 1:30 a.m., I think, when I realized he was going to win. The votes had not yet come in. Some stations had not called it, but I knew he was going to win. So early Wednesday morning, a great big old smile came on my face, and I tell you, it has not left. It has not left. I am elated. Now, unlike Kamala Harris, I've got a real reason to laugh. I've got a real reason to laugh. And I tell you, folks, I am so thrilled. Congratulations to the inimitable, the bold, the courageous, the strong, the determined Donald J. Trump. I'll tell you what, he may not be the greatest American president in our history, but he's got to go down as one of the greatest, and certainly, without doubt, a significant president in the history of this nation. I mean, the man's resilience. He has been persecuted. He has been prosecuted. He has been impeached. He has been slandered. He has been lied on. They've attempted to arrest him. They've attempted to put him in jail. Two assassination attempts on his life. He's been shot. But the man is absolutely indefatigable. He just doesn't quit. And I love that about him. And so now he stands elected again as the 47th president of the United States. I predicted that Donald Trump would win by between 291 and 318 votes, and that he would have a 4-point lead in the popular vote. I called it 52-48. He's at 57. He's at 47.5 for her, 51 for him. So the 4-point lead is holding, and there may be more as all the votes are counted. But I was pretty much on spot. That's the way, as I studied the polls and looked at things, that's the way I was reading it. And I am pleased to say I was right. I was also right in the fact that Donald Trump got a larger share of the black vote than any other Republican president in recent history. 25% of black men in Georgia voted for Donald Trump, and he won Georgia. He's going to average somewhere about 15% of the black vote. And remember, this is when Republicans, for a period of time, have been getting in the single digits of the black vote. And Donald Trump got 15%. And in some places, 20-25% of the black men voted for Donald Trump. As you all know, I was advertising through my PAC in Pennsylvania, North Carolina, and Georgia, and he won all three of those states. I could not be more pleased, folks. And I trust you feel exactly the same way. Now, a couple things we need to be praying about. First of all, we need to pray for peace to prevail, because as of the moment that I am recording this podcast, and this is, of course, the day after Kamala Harris has lost, she has not yet conceded. To my knowledge, she has not yet called Donald Trump. And she has certainly not yet had a rally, a meeting, whatever you want to call it, where she graciously concedes to her opponent and thanks her supporters. They didn't do that last night. They knew which way things were going. And they ended the meeting and turned out the lights and sent everybody home. And that was the signal that they knew they had lost. They did that before it was called, but that was the signal that they knew they had lost. I know what that's like. I know what it's like to have your top advisor or your top election analyst come in and meet with you privately and say to you, it's not going to happen. We're looking at the numbers. It's not going to happen. You needed to do well here. You needed to do well here. And you are underperforming here and here and here and here. And we can already tell you, it's not official yet, but when the night is over, you will have lost. And that's what somebody told her. And that's why she didn't come out. And they sent everybody home. But what she should have done was waited until the final results were in, come out, conceded, then thanked her supporters and told them to go home and be done with it. But instead, she stretched it out to the day. So we need to pray that there will be no unrest, that there will be no riots, that there will be no upheaval, that there will be no violence. They talked about Donald Trump is a threat to our democracy. Well, Donald Trump conceded last time. I mean, he didn't like it because he felt they cheated, and they did. They tried to cheat this time, too. But this time they got caught. Yeah, this time they got caught, and they couldn't cheat the way they wanted to cheat. So, but Donald Trump, when all is said and done, went back to Mar-a-Lago. So Kamala Harris needs to not be the hypocrite for once. And just step up and say, you know what? I lost fair and square. Congratulations to Donald Trump. And I'm going to be here to serve the country in whatever way I can. And ride off into the sunset. But, you know, when you've called people Nazis and you've called them deplorables and you've called them garbage and all of that, I suppose it's kind of hard to then turn around and say, well, wait a minute, these are human beings and my fellow citizens, and I respect them and honor them and accept the decision that they've made. Because that's what she should be doing. But she's not doing that. So I trust that it will be over. Maybe even by the time you're hearing this, she's finally conceded, because I'm told that at 4 p.m. on Wednesday, November the 6th, she's supposed to appear at Howard University to make her concession speech. I'm told that. Now, whether that will happen or not, we'll see. And maybe it already has happened. By the time you're hearing this, you can say, oh, yeah, she finally did it. Took her quite a while to get that done. She should have gotten that done last night or early this morning when the results were in. But look, folks, so we need to pray for that peace will be maintained in the land. And then we need to be praying for the vision to win back our culture. Because look, folks, here's the thing. We have now, it appears we're going to get control of all three branches of government. Let's put it this way. We'll get control of the White House, the Senate, and the House. And for all practical purposes, we, meaning conservatives, have control of the Supreme Court as well, but not the entire judiciary, obviously, because it's multifaceted and made up of many, many judges and many, many courts across all 50 states and territories. But for all practical purposes, it appears we will end up with control of the government. Again, by the time you hear this, who knows, maybe we've got the House. We're still a long way, because as I'm looking at the charts right now, we are still a good ways away from having, I think the last time I looked, we were about 19 seats away from having control of the House. Now it looks like it's about 18 seats. 18 seats away from having control of the House. We've got control of the Senate. We've got the White House. So now we as Christians need to focus on taking back the culture. Because look, government cannot transform the culture. It can help, because when you have a president who uses the bully pulpit to advance the values and the ideals that we believe in, that is certainly a help. I mean, we know what Barack Obama did to the culture. I mean, Barack Obama denigrated the culture and really led the culture into depravity, because he pushed homosexuality and he denigrated Christianity. And of course, you know, famously said about abortion, if my daughter gets pregnant, I don't want her punished with a baby. I mean, so life is just trash. You can just discard because it's punishment. I mean, that stuff is bizarre. I still will never understand it. And I don't even understand what kinds of moral pinnings a man has could have to think that way, or the lack thereof of those underpinnings that allow him to think that way. But at any rate, we've got to go into full blown war mode, not physical war, but a cultural war mode to win back the culture. And by that, here's what I'm getting at. We need to go on the offense instead of being on the defense. You know, so often we're on the defense. Oh, no, we're not homophobes. We're not racists. We're not transphobes. We need to put them on the defensive. We need to make the left start answering for their Marxism and their socialism and their sexual deviancy and perversion, and for their abuse of children and trying to turn children into their little leftist automatons, or leading children to mutilate themselves and to do all kinds of things to their bodies, because presumably they're in the wrong body and the only compassionate thing to do is to alter their bodies to match what they see as their identity, and punishing their parents if they won't go along and won't agree to gender affirming care. We've got to just put a stop to all of that. And that's where real cultural reformation comes in. We really do need a cultural revolution in our country to come back to the Judeo-Christian values and principles that made America the greatest nation on earth. You know, Andrew Breitbart famously said, politics is downstream from culture. Yours truly, not so famously, but nevertheless, yours truly said, but culture is downstream from a nation's spiritual condition. When the spiritual condition is bad, the culture is bad. When the culture is bad, the politics are bad. So we have to focus on the spiritual revival of this nation. I know we can't wave our some kind of wand and suddenly make, you know, the nation into revival and awakening. We can't have a full blown third great awakening by simply saying that we need one. And of course, some argue that we are already in one, because the Great Awakenings aren't known when you're in them. They're known when you look back on them. But I can tell you one thing. There is a lot of movement in this culture toward God and toward Judeo-Christian values, even though the elites are holding fast to their paganism and their godlessness. Many of them are just holding fast to it. They do not want to let it go, because it's how they define themselves. So we need to focus on the culture. Now, how do we do that? Well, obviously, we got to continue to speak up. We got to continue to uphold our Judeo-Christian values without apology. But, you know, when I ran for president, by the way, I tweeted out something and I got interviewed on Victory News in part about this tweet. I tweeted out, I ran, Trump won, I won. Because Donald Trump's win, as far as I'm concerned, is a victory for me. And I'm elated by it. But we have got to figure out what we need to do to get on the offense with regard to our culture and start making these leftists answer for their wild, crazy, radical positions. And by the way, Donald Trump did a lot of that. I mean, he called Kamala Harris a Marxist. He talked about the lack of common sense. He talked about having guys play on women's sports. I mean, he brought these issues to the fore. He talked about the ravages coming into our country as a result of the open border. We've got to kind of pick up where he left off, because now he's got to spend the next 4 years trying to govern. And I'm sure he's going to continue to do rallies and whatnot and continue to speak out. And that's going to be a help. But it's not the final answer. It's going to be a big help. And I don't want to understate that. It's going to be a big help, but it's not the final answer. The final answer lies in the hearts of the American people. So I've got an approach to this, a strategy, which I think is certainly worthy of discussion. And sometimes when I'm on live, maybe I'll have an opportunity to hear from you all on it. But I think that we as Christians need to propose a constitutional amendment that says life begins at conception. Now, mind you, I know there are a lot of pro-life people who will say, oh, but you can't do that because, you know, we'll lose that and blah, 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 blah. Look, and I don't mean to in any way disrespect, you know, the pro-life organizations that can be a little bit skittish about stuff like this, because they believe that their best victories are going to be incremental. But my vision is a pro-life country and a pro-life culture. And you're not going to get there with incrementalism. Let me just say this, because you all, I think, will be able to relate to this. Does anybody think that the way the left has gotten to where they are is by incrementalism? Well, you know, we're just going to take a little bit here, and then we'll come back for a little bit more. Now, you know what they do? They take a great big old bite out of the apple, and they just go for everything they think they want. And then when they're beat back with some concessions, we call that a victory because they didn't get everything they wanted. But guess what? They come back all over again for more. So we've got to rethink our approach. And I think we've got to start going for the gusto. I mean, we've got to start reaching and make them answer, make them defend. And so, for example, on the life issue, which is to me the easiest one and the first one to begin, I've got a proposal which I've used during my campaign for a constitutional amendment. And of course it would be controversial, and of course there are a lot of people who would fight it. And again, some of those people might even be in our own camp because they think it might be counterproductive. But let's stop talking about women's reproductive rights and start talking about the right of an unborn child to live. Because they don't want to discuss that. Because that brings in the morality of what they are doing. And they don't want to discuss that. They want to keep it pristine. They want to keep it hermetically sealed in their little bubble of, oh, no, this is just about women's reproductive rights. No, let's burst the bubble. And let's talk about the life of that unborn child. By the way, every single one of us, every human being, even Jesus, who was born of a virgin and laid in a manger and wrapped in swaddling clothes, even Jesus was first conceived. Of course, now we know that he was not conceived through the actions of a man, but through the actions of the Holy Spirit. But he was still conceived. And that initial conception by the word of God and the word spoken by the angel, the Holy Spirit shall come upon you, and the power of the highest shall overshadow you, and that which will be conceived in you will be called the Son of God. But from the moment of conception, that was Jesus. And the same is true for you, and the same is true for me. From the moment of conception, that is us. That is you, that is me. It is simply you or me at the earliest stage in our human development. But that development continues all of our lives. And to argue that it's not human, that it's not a person, I was talking to one of my staff members earlier, and he said, well, when two human beings get together intimately, and a child is conceived out of that, two humans can't conceive anything but another human. So from the moment of conception, it's clearly a human. And is he or she alive? Yes. Then it is a human being. They are being. They're not being. They're not being. They're being. And they're not human. They're human. How do we, as their fellow human beings, deprive them of what we have all so thoroughly enjoyed, which is the pleasure of life? Oh, life has, of course, its downs, and it has its challenges, and it has its pains. But normal people love life. Normal people enjoy living. And how dare we deprive that unborn child of the same privilege that you and I have enjoyed? Because you and I were once conceived. You and I went through all those same stages of development. And I've said, when does the child become a person? I mean, when? Explain it to me. We need to have them start answering these kinds of questions instead of our saying, well, when do you restrict a woman's reproductive rights? At 5 weeks, at 16 weeks, at 21 weeks, and at viability? I mean, it's all, you see what I mean? It's all kept in sort of a laboratory condition. You know, it's sanitized. It's euphemized. But when you start saying, well, wait a minute, when do you become a person? Oh, well, you don't become a person till after you emerge from your mother's womb. Well, is that while the umbilical cord is still cut? Or does the umbilical cord have to be cut? Because if it's while the umbilical cord is still intact, you if you're not a person, as long as the umbilical cord is intact, well, that means you can kill an unborn child after it comes out of the womb. If they just leave the umbilical cord in place and then kill it. Well, that's the logic of that. Oh, no, I wouldn't say that. Well, then, well, what about 1 minute before they're born? What about when the woman is fully dilated and she's about to deliver it, but the child is still encased in the mother's womb? Is it a person then? No, it's not a person at that point. Oh, so you can kill it then. Well, what about an hour before that? Well, what about a day before that? What about a week before that? What about a month before that? And in other words, at what point are you forced to concede that there is no point? It was always a person, but in the earliest stages of development. And that development continues for a lifetime. And how dare we step in as if we were Almighty God and decide whether or not that child should live? I mean, I've had people say, you know, well, you know, some children are born into very difficult circumstances, and they're not going to have a very good life. They're not going to have a very healthy life because of the circumstances they're born into a broken home or born into poverty and so forth. And my response is, oh, you mean like me? And like so many millions of others who were born into difficult circumstances, but turned their lives into something productive and contributing and helpful and even beautiful, even though they were born into ugly circumstances, who in the world do we think we are to take on the mantle of Almighty God and to decide, no, I've seen your life from beginning to end and it's not worth living. You're going to be snuffed out before you take your first breath. I mean, this is just, it's monstrous and it's evil and people need to answer for it. But we've been so busy, just like our Virginia governor made the mistake. He probably has regretted it, although I haven't talked to him about it. But he made the mistake of saying, well, let's just settle on 15 weeks and then move on to the really important issues. I'll tell you what, if life is not a really important issue, I don't know what is. So you see what I mean? Just conceding that territory and then saying, oh, but you know, now that we've got that out of the way, we can talk about really important things. See, on the defensive, we got to get on the offense. And I really believe that this is the simple constitutional amendment that I've come up with. And it's very straightforward. It says simply this: for purposes of equal protection under this Constitution, the laws and applicable legal rights of citizens of the United States of America, personhood shall be recognized from the moment of conception. For purposes of equal protection and the laws and applicable rights of citizens, personhood shall be recognized from the moment of conception. That means from the moment you are conceived, you are a person in the eyes of the law, and therefore your right to live should be protected. And when people say, well, but now wait a minute, Bishop Jackson, what about this? What about incest? What about rape? What about the life of the mother? Well, first of all, again, let's be clear. Those are a very, very infinitesimal part of the whole baby killing industry. They use those to try to shut people down. They use those to say, oh, well, if you don't go along with that, you're not reasonable. I mean, we've heard Donald Trump saying, but, you know, I believe in exceptions. Well, I've said before, if it's like an ectopic pregnancy and the life of the mother is really at stake, if she delivers, then that's a prudential decision. She and her doctors have to decide, do I give up my life for my child? Do I surrender the life of my child in order for me to live? Or maybe it's my child's birth is likely to be so difficult that the child will emerge severely deformed and that kind of thing. And I might die in the process. Those are, I mean, I'm not talking about where you're psychologically inconvenienced. I'm talking about where it's a real life or death situation. Those are prudential decisions that have to be made, because if it's a situation where somebody is going to die, I don't want to impose upon anybody who I think should die, because I don't want anybody to die. But you know what I'll also say? In some of those cases where mothers have embraced life and decided, you know what? I am going to trust God. Mothers who were given a death sentence, if they tried to have their babies, often end up with a healthy baby and a healthy mother. So I'm not recommending it under any circumstances. But I think there might be those circumstances in which it might be necessary in order to save human life. But those are rare, folks. We know that in reality, abortion is really used as a post-sex contraception. So basically, people can be as promiscuous as they want to be. And then if they end up conceiving a child, you just kill it and get rid of it. And that's the end of that. That's really what it's mainly used for. It's not a procedure that's often used. Oh, but this mother's life is at stake. We got to do something here. Give me a break. So very simple, very straightforward. But put the onus on the left and on the Democrat Party to explain, why are you so against the lives of unborn children? Why do you hate them so? What have they ever done to you? And then the second amendment I would propose, and I'm probably not going to have a chance to get into all of these, but I certainly want you to hear this one. This whole thing of anchor babies, somebody comes here on vacation, somebody comes here visiting, and suddenly they have a baby. Now the baby is an American citizen. That's not what the 14th Amendment was intended to accomplish. The 14th Amendment, Section 1, was intended to make my ancestors, the African slaves who were brought here, either as in intergenerational slavery or as indentured servants, that there would be no further question as to whether they were citizens of the United States of America. They were declared to be citizens. That's it. That's all. And so this anchor baby stuff has got to end. And here's just a constitutional amendment that I think resolves the problem, because I don't think you can resolve it with legislation. You certainly can't resolve it with an executive order. It simply says, any child of an American citizen born anywhere in the world shall be an American citizen. If you are a child of an American citizen and you are born anywhere in the world, you are, therefore, an American citizen. And it goes on to say, no person born in any state, territory, or the District of Columbia of the United States of America shall be an American citizen by birth unless at least one biological parent of such child is an American citizen. That's it. That is the only circumstance in which a child who's got a foreign parent but is born in America, that is the only basis upon which that child becomes an American citizen. But notice, though, if the child is born in Timbuktu and the mother's an American citizen, or the father's the biological father is an American citizen, that child is born a citizen of the United States of America. But on the other hand, you come to this country on vacation, you come to this country as a student, you come to this country visiting here for whatever reason, and you end up having a baby during your stay, that baby is not an American citizen unless one of those parents of that child is an American citizen. Now that's pretty straightforward. But the stuff of allowing our country to be infiltrated and watered down, and this is not about race. I don't care whether they're Europeans or Asians or Africans or you name it. You cannot come to this country visiting and have a baby and suddenly you're anchored by the new American citizen, which is the child. I mean, that's, folks, that's just preposterous. It's ridiculous. So there you got three right there. You got the pro-life amendment. Well, actually two. The pro-life amendment and this anchor baby amendment. Now, let me get into, because, and by the way, let me just back up and say, this is all by way of answering the question, now that we won an election, what do we do about reclaiming the culture? And here is what we can do in order to reclaim the culture. Here's a third. I think, yes, this is it. This is the third. For purposes of this Constitution and the laws of the United States and the laws of the District of Columbia, any state or territory of the United States, all references to sex or gender shall mean and only be defined as a man or woman, or synonymously, male or female, hereinafter to be known as his or her natural gender. It goes on to say section 2 of, actually that should say section A, I guess. But anyway, it goes on to say no person born with the physiology, biology, and the genetics of one gender shall have any legal claims or right to civil action or obliteration of a birth certificate because a birth certificate arising from the choice to identify as another gender or claim to be non-binary or gender fluid or offer his or her natural gender with hormone treatments or surgery. So essentially what it's saying is, your gender is your natural gender, period, and the law doesn't have to recognize anything else. That's essentially what it's saying. And you don't have a right to alter your birth certificate and change your name on it, and you can certainly change your picture to look like you, but you don't get to willingly just change your name and all that because you say so. And section 3. Nor shall the governments of the United States, the District of Columbia, or any states or territories of the United States recognize for purposes of legal or constitutional rights any attempted alteration of an American citizen's natural gender or claim of a new gender identity. In other words, what that's saying is you can't sue or bring claims against the United States because you don't feel that you're getting enough attention as a quote-unquote transgender. It says, once again, all governments shall be barred from issuing new passports, driver's license, identity cards, or any other kind of birth certificate based on such claims. And the claim is no government of the United States, District of Columbia, or any state or territory shall recognize for purposes of legal or constitutional rights any attempted alteration of. Now, folks, I've got some more, but the point is not to go through these in detail one by one here, but to say to all of us, we've got to get on the offense. We've got to get them walking backwards or running backwards instead of us constantly doing it. I mean, in fact, did I tell you all? I don't think I did, but I've got to get ready to go. I did election commentary on my podcast last night. I had a special edition, which didn't begin until 8 o'clock. I did it for 2.5 hours, only to find out Facebook didn't run it, and Instagram said it violated their community standards because I spoke with hate speech or something like that. So when I went on today, knowing that I'm broadcasting the same podcast to the same outlets, I said, let me read you what Romans 1 says. Let me read you what 1 Corinthians chapter 6 says, so that you get a sense of what the Bible teaches rather than what you think Bishop E.W. Jackson's opinion is. So, and like I said, I've got one on religious liberty. These are cultural statements as well as legal and political statements that say, government, you may go this far and no further. That's what the founding fathers intended, that the sovereignty of the people would always prevail against an overweening government or presidency. So, when are we going to start working on these? I think it won't be this week, but I think after this week, I'm going to turn my attention to this, in part at least, because I really believe that this needs some attention. And I believe that one way to make a lasting change that cannot be taken away by a Kamala Harris or George Soros or any puppets they come up with. One way to do that is to enshrine in the Constitution the rights, the ideals that we hold most dear. And once we've done that, I think it would be very, very, very difficult for them to undo, and very difficult for them to say, oh, no. See? Look over here at this wickedness, this evil. That's what we ought to be like. And I think the American people, once we get a revelation on life, I think we're going to be much, much harder to manipulate on any of the other issues. So, and you may have some other ideas, okay? You might have some thoughts about, well, Bishop, what we need to do is get in touch with me. I want to hear them. ewjackson@ewjackson.com. Please, let me know. Rest assured, I will take it under advisement. Because I am looking for good ideas that will help us to redeem the culture. Because I really believe you redeem the culture, you redeem the spiritual condition of a nation, you redeem the culture, you redeem the country and its politics, and before you know it, you've got the closest thing you'll come to heaven on earth. I said the closest, still far away, a long shot. Because Jesus said, pray, Lord, your kingdom come, your will be done on earth as it is in heaven. And that is what's ultimately going to happen. But until that happens, yeah. Now, you and I are not specimens for perfection. That won't work. So, but I've got others I can share with you. Email me again, ewjackson@ewjackson.com. Let me see. Am I going to be anywhere where it's important for you to know? I don't think so, actually. I think my business travel, well, not all of it, because I'll be at Caris the first week of December. But I think aside from that, well, I've got to go to Chicago over the death of Nathan Wallace's child, and they've just caught the perpetrators. So I've got to be there to stand with him when the verdict comes down, and the police press will be there and all that. So there's that. But it does not appear that I will be anywhere where you need to travel, or you could travel, because I'll be there speaking and you'll be able to come to see me. I don't think that's going to happen between now and the end of the year, although I do have, it looks like, about 3 trips to make between now and the end of the year in the next 2 months. But here's what you and I need to do. We have got to engage. We have got to get active. We can't let up because Donald Trump is won. Now, don't get me wrong. I'm going to take a couple of days off to pray and seek God's face about how he would have me implement this and do other things that I've got on my mind right now that I'm talking to the Lord about. But I'm not near quitting. As they say. I am not about to quit. We've got the wind at our backs now. We need to take it for all it's worth and push this country, move this country toward God, toward closer to becoming what it once was, a nation whose God is the Lord. So I hope this has been helpful in getting you to think beyond the election, although don't get me wrong. I very much have my mind on the election, and I don't know what I'm going to participate in and where I'm going to go, but I am watching it and I am enjoying every moment of it as it unfolds. But we've got to look beyond this election. Now that we've won it, we've got to look beyond it and begin to look at those waves of the future and determine what we want coming back on every hand. So God bless everybody. You know what to do. You know what? From the outcome of the election, I would surmise you've already done it. And God bless you for it. So in the meantime, you know what to do. Stand up, step up, speak up, refuse to back up. Worked pretty well for us. It'll keep working. Because we cannot be defeated if we will not quit. Because we are on God's side. God bless everybody.